Welcome to an AONN Plus podcast event created to provide a platform to engage and inform membership on relevant topics which impact your professional practice. The focus is on the AONN Plus 8 domains of knowledge. This podcast will highlight the Navigator Pledge that was developed in 2017. As a navigator, I pledge my head to share knowledge for informed decision making, my heart to empower advocacy and loyalty, my hands to deliver compassion and remove barriers, my hope to embrace and preserve quality of life. Navigators have within themselves the inner strength, the power, and the fortitude to do what is needed for patients. They should never doubt their abilities, knowledge, or willpower to make things happen. Thank you for joining us as we honor the navigators, special people that make a difference in the lives of those around them.
Hello there. This is Christina Rua. I'm the Director of Oncology Navigation for Sarah Cannon and East Florida Division, and I'm also the chapter co-chair for the South Florida Local Navigation Network for AONN. I'm joined today by Sue Ellen Glover, and we're going to talk a little bit about how it is to establish a local chapter and some of the challenges and issues that we ran into in different phases of establishing of a chapter. So hi, Sue Ellen.
Hi, Christina. Hello, everybody. As Christina said, I'm Sue Ellen Glover. I am the breast navigator at St. Petersburg General Hospital, which is on the west coast of Florida. And I started a new local network, the West and Central Florida Network, in March of this year.
So my chapter, actually, since we're talking about when they started, mine actually was an established chapter, and I took it over in January of 2017, so going on 3 years now. It was kind of defunct and not active when I took it over, and it was basically, in essence, starting from scratch. So Ellen, how did you start yours? Because I think that was one of our challenging things. I had a database of navigators already that was already established and then was able to recruit people from my team and from facilities in the area. But how did you get the message out that there was a chapter being started?
Well, I did the same kind of thing. I actually got a master roster for all of the AONN members in Florida. And then I just kind of filtered the ones that were in the region that I was targeting. I also recruited local healthcare professionals, caregivers, and even some patients that had an interest in lay navigation. And once I established that whole group, I developed a very short little survey basically to try to gather how much interest there was, meeting locations, meeting times, what greatest challenges to navigation, top barriers, and basically top areas of interest for everybody, and then kind of use that to formulate the plan going forward.
Wow, you were definitely a lot more structured than I was. I was kind of fake it till you make it and wing it. But definitely we sent out similar, we're restarting this chapter emails. And we actually started with industry-sponsored chats. And as the chats went along, we started incorporating some topics that were related to AONN, updates as far as what was happening at the national level, started incorporating some different meeting topics as far as barriers to care and what we were doing. But we really focused mostly on that networking aspect. And it was nice to be able to connect with different navigators from different healthcare systems, particularly being in Miami, where there's so many of them, and a lot of the patients travel from one healthcare system to another. It was nice to be able to have a resource on the other end, to be able to literally just pick up the phone as a navigator and say, hey, Sue Ellen, I'm sending you this patient. This is their history. This is what they've got. Can you be on the lookout for them, or can you connect with them? And that would make a more of a seamless handoff. So I think that was the biggest success and achievement that we obtained with it. But obviously things have taken a little bit of a spin now with the global pandemic and being able to meet in person. So for you, I can imagine it must have been a huge challenge because you started right before the pandemic hit.
Right. Yeah. I think that I got my approval maybe March 2nd. And it was very shortly thereafter that that became a big thing. So there was no meeting in person and doing that kind of networking. I love the idea that you're handing off patients to navigators in other areas. We haven't gotten that far. So far, we're really just kind of focusing on the needs of the members. So we've had two meetings to date, online, of course. The second one, though, we had 23 attendees, so I thought that wasn't really bad because it was in the first 6 months. What we've decided to do is try to get somebody to present for the first 15 minutes of each meeting on a topic of interest to most. So the last meeting, we had a certified lymphedema therapist on. And we actually spent most of the meeting with Q&A with her, which was fine because we don't really have any other agenda just yet. But we have a CE program coming up in February that we are co-hosting with a local ONS chapter. It's two back-to-back CEs. One is immunotherapy and the other is on GYN cancers. And I've got a lot of positive responses from the members as far as attending that. So my goal for this year, I hope, is to achieve 501c status so that we can start doing fundraising and actually be able to get some pharma sponsorship so that we can do events in the community. And I would really love to be able to sponsor some of our members to go to AONN meetings and other educational events.
Wow, that's a cool thought process, actually. I haven't done any of that. We have a zero budget. Again, that's why we kind of leaned into the industry to help with sponsoring the dinners. But I think that 501c3, that's pretty cool. Definitely keep us posted on how you're doing that and how the process goes through, because I think that'd be something that would be best practices for all of the different chapters. And we could definitely all learn a lot from what it is that you're doing. I mean, I think it's a great idea. We have a very active ONS chapter here, and it's really, really large. And in addition to the ONS dues, there's also the chapter dues. And I kind of tried to stay away from that just because I know that it was a strain on some nurses and they really wanted to take part in meetings. So I kind of stayed away to chapter dues and focused more on being open and inclusive. And we actually included some oncology nurses just because there's such a fine line sometimes with what they're doing in the clinic spaces. And it is a lot of navigation, despite the fact that they don't have that actual title. So we did include some of those, and they actually joined AONN after our meetings just because they felt that what they were doing was also oncology navigation. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how that 501c3 goes and what you do with that. That'd be definitely something neat to present even to other chapters.
At this time, we're not charging any dues either. I figure down the road, we'll see how big we do or don't get and whether or not that's something feasible, but it would be nice not to have to even ask for that, as you say. The biggest challenge to the 501c is writing the bylaws. I started it. I can't even tell you how many pages it is right now. I haven't worked on it in a while, but once I get through that, and I've tried to enlist help, you know, I'm hoping, oh, maybe somebody out there is married to an attorney or something like that, but so far, no takers, so it's all on me. But like you, our membership is really open to any healthcare professional that has an interest. And I've had the same experience that a lot of oncology nurses and ONS members have decided to join AONN as well. Gotten a lot of interest from non-navigator oncology nurses, which I think is great.
Yeah, I've found a lot of oncology nurse educators have joined as well because they're doing so much of the education and helping with some of those barriers to care. So I think I've seen a lot of that come up forward too. And then I've had some administrators join, directors of programs as well. And it's kind of nice to have that background from them in the sense of, you know, how administrative-wise navigation is perceived and what it is that we do and what the role is, and talk a little bit, chime in a little bit about role delineation, which is something near and dear to my heart. But definitely, it's nice to have a variety of people. It'd be nice to maybe engage some physicians too as well that are passionate about navigation or pro-navigation. That maybe will be our next goal.
For me, one of the main reasons I wanted to start a new network is because in our area, navigation is really not very well known. I'm always shocked, including with oncology physicians. I'll go to an appointment with a patient now virtually, and they absolutely have no idea about the role. And therefore, if they don't know about the role, patients in the community don't know. So there's a lot of opportunity to help these people that is being missed. And so I really am trying to drill it down to a community level. I always have patients that when they get through their treatment, they want to be able to give back and help. But in a hospital setting, there's not always a place for non-clinical people to come in and do anything. So they were very excited to join. And I have connected them with George Washington University, who provides a free lay navigation course. And so they're taking that just to kind of understand what navigation is.
How do you recruit those patients? Because I think that's actually a great idea. And I think that a lot of us don't tend to think that our patients would get involved in that way. And I think that's something that maybe we're underutilizing. I mean, I have to admit that we don't have any patient engagement in our chapter. We do have lay navigators from different healthcare systems, but haven't really reached out or created that connection and that bond to kind of engage a patient into lay navigation.
When I sent out that initial survey, when I first started the chapter, I just included patients that expressed a desire to be involved with helping other people get through their cancer experience. And pretty much everybody that I reached out to was interested in seeing what it was about.
Were you cautious? It's always my concern with getting patients engaged in something like that, is that fear of reoccurrences and how that affects their perception on the whole thing. Did you select a group of patients, or was it just everybody who had voiced interest, regardless of their stage and their diagnosis and what their prognosis was?
Yeah, I really didn't discriminate. I just considered who had expressed an interest. One is not my patient, but she is a now 3-time cancer survivor, which I didn't even know she had gone through breast cancer last year. So that hasn't stopped her determination. I think maybe even more so since she's been through so much and has gotten to the other side of all these things. So she's really, really wants to help other people. And I think it's great.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, I know of people that have become lay navigators or financial navigators because of family members or experiences that they've lived. We've done a poor job down here, I guess I admit, including the patients in that whole process. And I think what you're doing is commendable and actually really, really great stuff for us to mimic. I think this is what's cool about this conversation that, yeah, you know, that we're different phases of our team and of our chapter. And I'm getting some really great ideas from here. So we'll have to elevate. What do you do as far as like social media awareness to your group? Do you have a Facebook page? I mean, we started one, especially right now during COVID, it has been the best way of communication, where we put out different resources that we're finding in the community, different events, food banks, financial counseling and financial advising and hotlines and whatnot. So we use that a lot to communicate to all of our members in a way that we're not bombarding their emails all the time. And have one person that is our Facebook guru, and she uploads everything and anything that comes through. Do you guys have something similar to that?
Yeah, we also have a Facebook page. And like you, I try to limit my emails to the membership specific to meetings and things like that. But I will also post that information on our Facebook page. And we have a dedicated area for sharing resources. And that's one of our other initiatives with meetings, is for every meeting to either bring a new resource or bring a new potential member. And I encourage people to share their resources on the Facebook page for others. And anything that's in the news, any articles of interest, anything that comes by my desk that I think is worthy of sharing goes on there.
Do you encourage your members to kind of focusing in on AONN and some of the program offerings that they have and some of the other committees that are out and available? Because that's one of the things that I've tried to do. I've learned over the years being involved with AONN that expanding past our region is beneficial as well. And just from being in different committees and being involved with them, I've been able to network too as well. I'm big into networking, as you can tell. I've been able to connect with navigators outside of my geographic area, some at Duke, some at Emory, UPenn, Chomps, different areas that we can definitely connect. That's one of the things that every time that there's openings, and we do kind of get, like I said, a AONN national update. These are the committees that are out there. They're looking for members to try to engage your chapter members to be involved at a national level. Have you done that?
I haven't, as far as the committees. I'm personally not involved in any of the AONN committees just yet, but that's a great idea. My networking to date has mostly been through Sarah Cannon and HCA. In fact, I figured that out very shortly after starting here almost 7 years ago, when I was given pretty much a desk and a fax machine and a phone and said, go start this program. So I reached out to the whole group across the nation, and I got so much good feedback, so many resources, so much support, and I made sure to pay that forward over the years. So that's probably my biggest network, but I love the idea of expanding to some academic facilities and reaching beyond our bubble of Sarah Cannon.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I used to be with a different healthcare system. And when we restarted the chapter, I kind of got some resistance from other healthcare systems as a, well, you're in the competitor and I don't want to talk to you and don't want to engage. And when I kind of started reaching out, originally, I had done the mailings and the emails from my work email saying at least they'll realize that I'm a nurse and that I'm a navigator and that I'm a friend and a colleague. But I kind of found that that was causing more issues than benefits, because they would see my healthcare system and it was, you know, there's always some competitiveness between different systems.
I've never faced that at all.
It was pretty uncomfortable and pretty bad. And despite the fact that I knew some of the leaders of the different programs. So I started actually doing it for my personal email, and the responses that I got were far better. And I got them to engage a little bit more. And once we started to see that this wasn't really a my system versus your system, it was what are the best practices? How can we collaborate? How can we communicate? How can we learn from each other? I was able to kind of break down some of that. We actually cover 3 counties, and that's a little challenging just because in the Miami area and the Broward and Palm Beach area, there's a lot of traffic. So I have tried to alternate where the meetings physically took place at once. So I found that I've been able to kind of overcome that here in the Dade County area, which is where really our big systems are, University of Miami, Baptist, HCA. Haven't really been able to do that as well in the Broward County area. Again, I'm not quite sure. I think their programs are a little different too as well, but that was one of my biggest challenges. And I commend you for, or maybe it's just the people that are surrounding you that aren't quite as particular about where you come from and who you work for.
Well, our network is, I'd have to go look and actually count, but I want to say at least 15 smaller counties, kind of stretches across the whole center of the state. I'm not so much the East Coast, because I figure a lot of that gets picked up by South Florida, but there's a lot. And our biggest competitors, I guess, would be BayCare for us and Moffitt Cancer Center. But in complete reverse of what you've experienced, I've had nurses from both systems reach out and say, oh, can I share this with my colleague? I know this person who would really like to belong. So,
well, it's interesting that you say that, because when I first started the chapter, we kind of sent it out, not really paying attention to where people were throughout that East Florida, South Florida, kind of Central Florida. And somehow or another, there was actually nurses from Moffitt that got information about the chapter. Mm-hmm. And they reached out to us and were kind of curious. Again, this was prior to you and I meeting. So I was like, I'm happy to help you guys start one remotely and give you some feedback. But at that point, she obviously didn't undertake the challenge. Honestly, I think bottom line is it's a lot. Obviously, there's a lot of challenge to it, but it's kind of fun and it's a lot easier. You have gone above and beyond with your 501c3s and your surveys and everything. You're making me feel like I'm like the deadbeat, you know?
Oh, no. not at all.
Not great chapter co-chair, but anyway, I think it's awesome and it's a lot easier. And the reward from it has been so cool. So cool.
It's still early enough for me where I can't say I've gotten to the point where I can reap big rewards yet. But to be perfectly honest, my motivation for the whole 501c3 was just having a bad taste in my mouth from another organization I was involved with and in leadership with, where the entire chapter became about only industry-sponsored events. We had no presence in the community. We weren't participating in even any oncology-related walk, making strides against breast cancer or the ovarian cancer walk or anything like that. It was really just dinners with topics that were not based on what the membership wanted or needed, just whoever the speaker could be. And it just got old for me. So I wanted to be able to give our membership education and presentations and things like that that really are relevant, and can't do that without some money. So
no, again, that's one of the big takeaways from our conversation today that I'm going to have. The scope of what you can do is definitely a lot bigger with that funding behind you and being able to give back. I mean, obviously, as nurse navigators, innately, that's what our goal is, to help patients. And we do some bizarre things and probably untraditional things to get them the resources that they need. It'd be great to be able to go out into the community, not just to raise awareness for cancer patients and prevention, but also to what the role of nurse navigation is. That's pretty big. And like you mentioned earlier, it's very common. I've seen a lot of physicians that have no idea what our role is. And there's always that blurry line of the clinic role duty and the nurse navigator duty. And why are you here? And are you supervising what it is that I'm saying or doing? I have team members. I get a lot of that. You know, oh, we have a nurse. She takes care of that. So I think it's awesome to expand from within the confines of just AONN and our day-to-day role and get into the community. And actually, I'm not even aware of, I don't necessarily know if there's other chapters that are doing that. It'd be interesting to tap into that and see. Do you know of any?
I don't know what North Florida does. I haven't gotten to the point where I'm really interacting with the other networks just yet. I'm still in the trying to get it all off the ground phase, but I have to speak to what you said about the physicians, which we both brought up, that they don't know what navigation is, and recall a consultation I attended just pre-COVID, where it literally took me 3/4 of the consultation to convince this physician that I wasn't a friend of the patient, with my lab coat on and my business card. And finally, then he started asking if I had questions and everything. And it was just really funny. I said, "No, I'm really not here as her friend." And he's like, "Yes, you are." Really not.
Well, you know, a friend that's here with a role and a job and a completely different perspective. I've encountered a lot of the more so of why are you with my patient? Why are you discussing my patient more so than that? How did you find my patient? That's another one.
I've been lucky. I only have one oncology physician who just doesn't support navigation at all for that very reason. In layman's terms, to kind of keep control over his patients, but that's not so bad out of
So
all.
another random aside, I'm surprised that physicians aren't aware that there's navigation. I mean, there's pharmaceutical companies have them, some of the specialty pharmacies have them, insurance companies have navigation, and this just popped in my head right now. I don't necessarily think that I've ever seen in any of the conferences that I've been to navigators that are connected to an insurance company or that are connected to a pharmaceutical company.
I think they tend to refer to them as case managers and care managers, but basically they are navigators of sorts. I don't know
One.
that they always do exactly what we do.
Like, again, this is a complete random thought. I had one that reached out to me from a specialty pharmacy for a medication that I take, and she introduced herself as a nurse navigator. And I found it really interesting. At first, I kind of was like, let me let her see what she says, and then maybe I'll chime in and tell her that I am one as well, which I did afterwards because she was asking me the typical clinical questions, and did I have any barriers, and did I have any issues to accessing the medication and administering the medication and side effects and this and that. And so we actually struck up a conversation as far as nurse navigation, but it was interesting that that's exactly how she introduced herself and gave me her number. I have to say that I haven't called her again, but poor thing. Well, I mean, I guess maybe it happens a lot, but we did have a conversation as, you know, do patients call you back and, you know, do they connect with you? I again think it'd be kind of interesting to incorporate them. Not that I would know even how to begin to tackle that. But she did. I was pretty surprised that she introduced herself as a nurse navigator. So that's kind of another, I don't know. I mean, I would think that it had benefits to us to connect to them because they probably have a lot of funding resources that we bang our heads trying to find financial resources or copay assistance and whatnot.
Yeah, that is a nightmare. Always. Always,
Yeah.
always, always. It's the
I don't
worst
know.
part of the job.
Again, another thing that I guess at some point we can add to the list of potential recruits.
Absolutely.
But you seem to be pretty creative in being able to figure out how to connect with everybody. So we'll add that to the umpteen million list that you.
Yeah, I just hope I can get some of them to come to the meeting. That's all. And eventually, when this pandemic is hopefully over, that we can actually get out physically into the community and start having a presence. But I think that's going to be a little while. So for now, I'm just trying to build the membership and focus on education and resources for the members until such time as we can really start doing more in the community.
I think it's awesome that you've had such success with the virtual meetings. tell me a little bit about, because actually it's something that I've struggled with. And I don't know if it's because there's so much Zoom fatigue. What time did you schedule them? How long were they? Because I've tried playing a little bit with when the timing of the meetings took place. Sometimes I kind of scheduled them at the same time that we had scheduled the in-person meetings. But again, my attendance has changed drastically, where we would have 20, 30 people in person, but in my virtual meetings, 10, 15 tops was a really good meeting.
Well, before any meeting, I do send out an email to the members to let them know what the topic is and, again, get a level of interest and also offer different days and different times to see what works for most. And we have found that, I don't remember, it doesn't matter what day, you know, a weekday at noon or somewhere around the lunch hour seems to work the best for most. After hours, I think, like you said, people have everything fatigue and just don't want to get on another call. I think we did a 5 to 6 o'clock, the first one. I mean, it wasn't poorly attended for a first meeting, but it wasn't 25 people either. But I just try to encourage as many people as possible to get back with me so that I can try to figure out, as I said, the best time for most and best day for most and go with that.
Yeah, I've been hesitant and reluctant to doing it in the middle of the day just because obviously we know how nursing goes. And there's sometimes that you have a lunch break. There's sometimes that it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you realize you haven't eaten. So I had been doing them in the evening and I just realized this just doesn't work. Fortunately, before the pandemic, we were able to fit in a bunch of meetings. We had originally started with, we'll do them quarterly, and then realized that there was a lot more need and demand for them and started doing them every other month. And then before I knew it, I was booked every single month. So at least we were able to get in a bunch before the pandemic hit and we had to cancel the live ones. And we're able to take some of those live ones that I already had scheduled and make them virtual. And I think, again, it's the timing of it have been as successful as the live ones. Obviously, the live ones, a lot of people want to see each other and they want to connect right. And they want to talk, throw in there a good dinner. And that, you know, right. Kind of entices people to come out a little bit more. Maybe we'll tackle the midday one.
You know, you're never going to get a day or time that works for everyone. And I'll ask before each meeting because people's needs and schedules and everything could change. So again, just going which seems to work best for most.
Now, are you doing this all alone or do you have a co-chair or treasurer, secretary, however you want to title them?
So I had a cohort who helped me along the way, and she has actually taken a committee position, chair position within Sarah Cannon. So she's had to bow out. But I basically have a full board now. I have a treasurer, a secretary, a nominating chair, a program chair. Not that they can do anything with a lot of these things so far, since we don't have a bank account or money or any of those things, but they're in place. As we move forward and get some things accomplished, then we will have our biannual elections and that kind of thing. But yeah, I've gotten great commitment from my fellow navigators in being willing to step up and help get it all moving.
Yeah, so we started originally with myself and my co-chair, and it was kind of one of these random endeavors where the previous chapter chair, who had moved into industry and had established the chapter, we connected, and she said, you know, you really need to take this over. I haven't done anything with it in several years. You may want to look into it, and I thought she was crazy. And then when I connected with my co-chair, we kind of decided to take it on and split the duties in the sense of, obviously, I'm the more vocal. I love to present. I want to network. I want to go out and establish that. And she's more keeps us in line, make sure that all of the paperwork and all of the accountability stuff gets taken care of. All of our monthly reports get sent in. So was able to kind of delegate because I wouldn't have been able to do all of it. It would have been just too daunting of a task. And then as we started growing and shifting into having more of a presence on social media, and we got somebody to act kind of as what we call the secretary, because she's more of a putting things out there and communicating and emailing and that kind of stuff. So we incorporated and got a secretary too as well. The treasurer part, obviously, I never considered doing because, I mean, granted, it'd be an easy job, $0 in, $0 out. But we also haven't considered either having elections and potentially taking that chair role and passing it on to somebody else. I haven't had any feedback either of people that were willing to take it on. I've had people saying, if you need any help, let us know. Have you thought about that? Are you going to consider being the chair forever or?
Oh no, the torch will be passed. I think it should. My goal might be 2 years. It might not be 2 years. It might be 3 years or 4 years or whatever, but that's what I want to move towards, is having new blood every 2 years. And hopefully it won't be like some of my other experiences where the same five or six people just keep swapping roles every 2 years. Just
Yeah, actually, this month is our 3rd year anniversary. So it's something that I have thought a lot about. And as it changes, sometimes you want to refresh. Just sitting here and having this conversation with you, your ideas are pretty eye-opening and things that I never even considered. And again, make me feel like I need to refresh the chapter and maybe bringing some new blood on board.
That's why we talk, because you've given me some ideas too. As we move forward more with actually working with people in the community, as I've said, being able to have the resources for people out of the area and say, I can connect you with this person to get some help and get some information outside of the hospital system.
I think this podcast has opened my eyes. Maybe we need to have quarterly meetings with local chapter leaders to share best practices and what it is that we're doing. Because I'm
That would be
telling you, this
great.
has been awesome for me in the sense that I've been able to learn so much from you. So we'll put that as a what to do in the future and add that to our list of ways to grow navigation chapters.
And my last thought is that I'm a very good sharer. So if and when I ever accomplish getting these bylaws done, I'll save you that time. If you could just fill in your own blanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, but even thinking of it, like you mentioned, it'd be nice to see if there's other people. This has been a great conversation and lots of really cool ideas. And I look forward, maybe we can do some other chats. I'm definitely sharing your best practices and what you've encountered and experienced. This has been fun. Thanks. I
It
appreciate talking
has
to you.
been. Yes, thank you. It's been great. Appreciate all your
Awesome. Well,
input and
keep us posted.
ideas.
And the Florida team, maybe we can do a state meeting.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Sue Ellen. It
Thank you
was
so much, Christina. It's always nice talking to you.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for joining AONN Plus and today's engagement with key knowledge leaders. To enhance your navigation practice or program, please visit aonnonline.org for other navigation tools, education, and best practices to advance the role of patient navigation in cancer care across the care continuum.